I'm so glad I caught you home. This must be Miriam Ross.
Yes.
Formerly Wolf.
Ah, yes. This is must be David.
This is the man who's been following you for years. I hope you have just a couple of minutes that we can chat.
Yeah, hold on just a sec.
Of course.
Sorry about that.
No problem at all.
Yeah.
When I saw you at the convention in October, I was rather discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
You recall we chatted briefly in the lobby of the hotel.
Yeah, I remember.
You asked me how the book was coming along, and I told you that even though you were so nice to me a couple of years ago, you sent me some photographs, you chatted with me on the phone, answered lots of questions. I was having... let me put it this way. A small problem with Mr. Michelson in terms of getting...
Who is Charles Michelson?
Apparently, he is he lives on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And he was Alonzo... He says he was Alonzo Dean Cole's agent.
Never heard of him.
He sold or syndicated some of those programs overseas to Australia and to other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
He was a friend of, apparently, Alonzo Dean Cole's first wife was Marie Flynn. Right.
Maria Flynn.
And they were...
I didn't realize that he had been married again.
They were divorced, apparently, in the 1950s.
Oh, really?
And he married a woman named Dorothea.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothea lives in Glendale, California. And she tells me that she married him around 1955.
Mm-hmm.
She is the person who actually had the scripts in her closet.
Yeah.
At home.
Yeah.
And I had no idea, you know, who she was or that she even existed.
I had no idea who she was when you kept mentioning her in your letters.
Well,
whatever happened to Maria O'Flynn, because she's the one who was...
Well, I asked him that question, and you know, take what I say with a grain of salt, because I'm just repeating, you know, what has been told to me. But his comment was, she may have ended up in the nut house, and that's an expression. And that's not my expression. That was his expression.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had the sense that she was somewhat.
She was a bit fey, but she was very down to earth, much more so than he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's described by his widow as being, quote, quite a ladies' man, a person who, you know, anytime there was a party, etc., he was the center of attraction, would just sit down on the floor and tell stories.
How old was he when he died?
Well, he died in 1971. I have his birth date somewhere, but I don't have it right in front of me. For example, you were born in 1922, according to the... And your first appearance, because now I actually have every single one of the scripts.
How wonderful.
I spent... it's insane. I spent day after day, because I had to return this script. I didn't buy the scripts. I bought the right... to reproduce a half a dozen or so, not a half a dozen, but a dozen or so in an anthology.
Mm-hmm.
I have my feeling is, my wife tells me, no one's going to buy the book, but but it's a labor of love. I don't think Arthur Anderson made any money or made much money on Let's Pretend.
Tell your wife to mind her own business.
But it's such fun.
She's very surprised.
It's such fun. I think there are enough. The only trouble with the program is that it was around... I hope you don't mind me saying this. The programs were broadcast from 31 to 38.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other programs that are around, like Let's Pretend, whoever made the disc, the transcriptions for Let's Pretend, must have used good quality transcriptions.
No, I'll tell you what happened. Most of the Let's Pretend shows that you've got were done after tape came in.
Yeah.
Witch's Tale was live. Any of the shows that were done live, including Let's Pretend, all they had on those, and I don't know where they got the tapes of them, were air checks, and they were done on huge wax records. And those wax records were for the check for the people in the studio to make sure that nobody had said a dirty word or in case there was anybody came back on it. Then they were recorded over by the next program. So they were lost.
Well, apparently there were some kept of the witch's tales.
Of the wax.
But they were poor quality.
Well, they were all poor quality.
Yeah.
At that time, it was a live show. There was no technique of taping them. Tape was not in yet. They hadn't invented it yet.
One of the things that Mrs. Cole gave me, she didn't give it to me, she loaned me a copy of his scrapbook.
Oh, yes.
And in his scrapbook, he has copies of the playbills that when he performed for Schubert Theaters in the teens.
That he performed with Niall and Mack on the road.
That I didn't know.
Yeah.
That I didn't know.
They did a show together. I'm trying.
But he was in vaudeville. His sister apparently was on the stage also. His wife tells me that his sister's name was Muriel, and they named a cigar after his sister. Interesting story, if it's true. And even if it isn't true, it's an interesting story.
Interesting story, yeah. Isn't that great? You've got all this. Now, what are you going to do with all this information?
Well, the first thing, after spending day after day at the copying machine, thank God my machine didn't break down. I now have copied approximately 330 scripts.
Holy.
That's the entire run of the program. He kept everything.
Yeah.
That man was meticulous. Everything was kept in file folders chronologically. So the first thing I am doing is to put together a log of each program. Date, title. He has, in most cases, he has cast. For example, I can tell you that your first performance as Nancy was on June 13, 1935.
Really?
Before you, let's see, Mrs. Fitzallen, who was the first Nancy.
Adelaide Fitzallen.
Right. She passed away in February.
Uh-huh.
And he tried a couple of other people. After her death...
He auditioned quite a number of actresses.
My notes say that the three actresses actually played... When I say this, I'm taking this from the scripts because he lists the people who were in the cast.
Yeah.
The first person named after Miss Fitzallen passed away is someone called Barbara Winchester. I don't know if that name rings any bells.
No.
Then a person named Holland, Ms. Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ms. Lubow, Lubowe.
Mm-hmm.
And Winchester played it once, Holland played it two or three times, Lubow played it two or three times, and then Miriam Wolfe. And he spells her name on the script W-O-L-F-F.
Good for him. He got my name right.
Well, in everything, in all the books, it's spelled W-O-L-F-E.
I'll tell you what happened. If you got a minute, I'll tell you.
Sure, I have lots of minutes.
Okay. What happened with that was my legal name was W-O-L-F-F. And when I worked, I used W-O-L-F-F. When I did Let's Pretend, I thought I was using W-O-L-F-F. But when I went down to CBS cashier, they put on my checks W-O-L-F-E. And I couldn't stop them. I kept complaining, and I kept complaining. So I opened a bank account with W-O-L-F-E, and my name became F-E-F-F.
Well,
sorry.
That's funny, because I thought he was misspelling it on the scripts.
No.
Because everywhere I see your name, it's always W-O-L-F-E.
Yeah, no, that was the correct name, because that was before AFTRA came in, and it just before AFTRA came in, and just before Nyla stopped giving us $3.50 in the palm of her hand. Then they established a cashier at CBS where we had to go pick up our checks.
Well,
so there.
I have. If I'm not going to keep you on for an hour or two, but
right.
I do have a first. Would you be willing to write a brief forward, a preface, something for the book?
I'd want to know a little bit more about the book first.
Well,
I yes or no, okay?
I will tell you exactly what I'm hoping to do.
Okay.
I would like to write an introduction for the book, and the introduction will simply talk about before I had something written out a little while ago, before the crypt, the Tales of the Crypt, before the slasher movies, before even Lights Out and Suspense in the Shadow, there was The Witch's Tale.
Yeah.
As, you know, one of the very earliest. I don't know of any creepy horror program that was broadcast prior to The Witch's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
And then provide a little bit of history with regard to how it came to be broadcast. Talk about Mr. Cole as the author.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about how the scripts were developed, many of which came apparently from other sources, but he wrote most of them.
He wrote most of them, and they were mostly originals, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how long the introduction will be yet. I haven't even outlined it, but I have some ideas.
Yeah.
But the introduction will basically talk a little bit about old radio, a bit about the history of The Witch's Tale, and a short biography of Mr. Cole.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I would introduce about 12 or 13 sounds like a more mysterious number. Try to select 13 scripts to be reprinted in anthology form.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps one from each year that the program is broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the book, have a log of the programs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it.
What are you going to do with the pictures and the material that you have there?
Well, I would like to, there's a beautiful picture that you sent me of Nancy as of the witch as a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get a copy of, if I can get that, I don't know how many of them, but if I can get a few of them in the book, I would like to try to do so.
No, what I'm trying to say is, what are you going to do with the material, though? Because
I'm not sure I follow you.
The stories that I told you about Witch's Tale and the background and the people who
were
and the rest.
I would.
It's just going to be a book of the scripts with an introduction by you.
Yes. Yes, I'm using your material in terms of how I would try to use that as part of the introduction, and also part. I wouldn't repeat anything in the introduction that you would put in your preface. What I was hoping would be that you would kind of talk about it on a first-hand basis. You know, how you got involved in The Witch's Tales and why you remember it fondly, and why you would like to share these scripts, hopefully, with today's audience. I'm being a little. If I'm being dense, forgive me.
No, you're not being dense. It's just that I don't want to write your book.
That's why I'm not asking you to write pages and pages. I just thought.
I'm sorry. I'm very direct.
That's. I am not asking you to write my book. I just feel that I don't know of any other human being.
Thank you.
Who exists on this earth who knows as much about that program as you do. Mrs. Cole was 21 years younger than Alonzo Dean Cole.
Mm-hmm.
She tells me that she heard the program when she was 12 years old.
Who's this, Dorothy?
This is Dorothy. It's Dorothea, I guess, is her name. But she said she heard the program when she was when she was 12 years old, and she asked her mother, she said, who would want to go home with a man like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, a few years later, of course, I went home with a man like that.
Yeah.
So,
an actress?
No, she has no activity, nothing at all to do with show business. Apparently he had no children by his first wife, and they had two children.
Really?
No, they had one child.
Really?
As husband and wife. She has a daughter, and she has two grandchildren who are his grandchildren.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
So, I don't want... your name in the book, from my perspective, would be The Honor. Because,
thank you.
I'm
very pleased that you're asking me, and I'm just being very wary because I am a professional writer.
I appreciate that. I don't want you to feel that you have to write anything of any great length. I want you to be comfortable I'm trying to think of...
Well, what I was thinking of doing, actually, was something that was in the style of the script, as Nancy. If I don't know what anecdotes you're going to use, but I would like to use a couple of the ones that I told you about.
Well, I wouldn't use... I would not repeat anything that you said, believe me.
Yeah, no, but
that would be foolish.
I didn't know whether you had it all prepared or...
No, I have a lot of thoughts in my... A lot of thoughts...
You know what I'd like you to do, so
sure.
You don't waste your telephone time and the rest of it. Write out a sort of a précis of what this whole thing is about. And give me, say, a first page of your introduction, and give me some idea of what you're going to put, the material you're going to use. And then let me go from there, because otherwise I can't plan on anything. Just how you plan to present the material that I've given you.
Well, I if anything you give me, I will not present. In other words, anything that you feel that you want.
Well, no, because I've forgotten most of the stuff I told you.
Yeah.
Frankly, I know what's in my head.
Right.
But I'd like to know what you're going to use of it, what you'd like to use of it. It's your book. And then I would be happy to write a fun introduction.
Yeah, but you see, Arthur Anderson wrote the book on Let's Pretend. That was his book.
Yeah.
This is, my feeling is that on this book, I'm an editor.
Yeah.
I'm not the author. The author of this book is Alonzo Dean Cole.
Yeah. It's an anthology of scripts.
Right.
That you're doing.
Right. I'm not the author of the book.
Yeah.
The cover, the title on the cover will read The Witch's Tale by Alonzo Dean Cole.
Mm-hmm.
My name won't even go on the cover. It'll be on the inside page as the editor.
Mm-hmm.
And as the editor, my sense is, I'm not a talented writer in that respect. Believe it or not, my wife and I have published guides to used bookstores. That's the extent of our publishing.
Oh, that's another thing I was going to ask you. Who's going to publish this?
We are.
Oh, you are?
We are because we published before.
And who's going to distribute it?
My wife is going to distribute it. We've sold, believe it or not, 40,000 books since I retired as a superintendent of schools.
Mm-hmm.
We're thinking of doing a book on Canada, on the used bookstores of Canada. we wrote a book, the year I retired, it was 1992,
mm-hmm.
And we haunt used bookstores.
Uh-huh.
We wrote a guide to the used bookstores in New England. We printed 2,000 copies, thinking if we sold 1,000, we would break even.
Yeah.
We sold the 2,000 within 6 months. And that book's been reprinted several times and revised.
Yeah. What kind of presentation are you making on it? I mean, is it how is it bound? In the
If you'd like, I'll send you a copy of one of our books. Because
no,
one of our we'll
like
do this.
How this is going to be bound.
We'll do it the same way that we've done this book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a trade paperback. We'll probably run about 1,500 copies.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to market it to two markets. We're going to try to market.
It's going to be hardcover.
No, it's going to be trade paper.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to sell it for $22. I think we'll sell it for $22. We'll try to sell it for $22.
Yeah.
It's going to cost me several thousand dollars just to get it printed.
Yeah.
But we're using the same marketing, the same techniques that we've used for our other books.
Yeah, well, I certainly wish you luck. I think this is a wonderful project. I mean, I'm not putting you down, okay?
No, I appreciate
I'm just trying to figure out what my part of it can be.
It can be as modest or as generous as you want to make it.
What I was thinking, actually, was something extremely brief,
mm-hmm.
Particularly emphasizing his sacrosanct scripts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you couldn't touch him without his breaking into rages and firing you from the show if you changed a word in his script. I mean, I thought I would present it that way so that every word you read is important in this book because this is the technique that he used.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I may be on the wrong track.
I feel like there's nothing I want. I don't want to direct you.
If this is something that interests you, then I probably could do it that way. But I would like to do it with humor. And as I said, maybe at the end of it, just say, so draw up to the fire and gaze into the embers and look at your book and start shivering. No.
That sounds frightening enough to me.
Well, I just said that off the top of my head. I hope I remember it. But that's the kind of introduction it would be.
All right. Again, I'll put something in the mail to you.
Yeah.
If you'd like, I'll send you a copy of one of our books.
I would appreciate that. I'd like to really, what I would enjoy would be just to have you write out your I can't think of the word.
Well, see, again, in my introduction was going to be more of that of a fan than that of a professional.
That's fine. I just want to know exactly how to approach mine. You see, and it depends on what the book is.
The book is an anthology.
Yeah.
And if I were the director, I would say, if I had the power to tell you, my direction would be to say, I was there.
Yeah.
I, Miriam Wolfe, was there.
Yeah.
I remember.
Well, I don't want to go into all of
here,
that.
You know, yeah. Here's what it was like for young people, for old people, etc.
Yeah.
I used to have a professor in college. When we would ask them how long a term paper should be, you know what the typical response was?
No.
Long enough to cover this, it's like a woman's dress. Long enough to cover the subject and short enough to make it interesting.
Yeah.
That was his comment.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't mean to make you blush.
No, I'm not.
But that's what the man said.
I'm too old to blush. Well, let me give this some thought, and I'll see what I can come up with. In the meantime, if you do have any part of the introduction, I would be interested in seeing it.
I don't really have much, but as a matter of fact, everything I have is almost an outline form.
Well, that's the word I was looking for.
Okay.
Send me the outline.
Can I ask you a couple of questions while we're on the phone now?
Sure.
All right. These are typed out in front of me, and, you know, I'm not going to put anything in my part that repeats anything that you say.
Mm-hmm.
All right? My comments here, you were born in 1922, made your first appearance in 1935. At that time, you were 13 years old. How did you get the job?
I would prefer for you to say that in your part of the book than for me to say it.
Well, okay, but I'd still have to know the answer.
How did I get the job? Nyla and Alonzo Dean Cole worked together in vaudeville years before, when they were working with Zimova and working the Palace and doing one-night stands all over the country. And she knew him, and she had heard that Adelaide Fitzalan had died and that he was looking for someone, and I had been doing Witches for her on Let's Pretend. I listened to the show surreptitiously, because my mother wouldn't let me listen to it. I had the radio under my pillow at 11:30 at night and was scared stiff. But apparently I was able to imitate. I had been listening to Adelaide Fitzalan for a long time. So when I went to audition for it, I think I told you about the audition. I came from school with my little school books and my curls, and he was late because he wrote the scripts until the last minute. This is what I think would interest the audience.
Right.
So that he not only wrote them at home till the last minute, came into rehearsal 3 hours late, revised every word as we went along, and then when we were on the air, kept giving us notes to make changes in the script, and when the script was overly long, he cut it and rewrote the epilogues in his own shaky handwriting so that we continued it to the next week. And we did a two-part version instead of a one-part version. Am I making sense?
Yes, yes.
You've got your mouth open?
My mouth is wide open. I'm in awe.
Anyway, it was quite an experience. When he auditioned me, finally, when he came in, he said he was in a rush. He said he had to rehearse. He had to get the show on the air. When I come back, after the show was over, which was at midnight. And so I went over to NBC. I was a friend of Molly Picon. She was on the Rudy Valley show. And I spent a little time with her, making her quiet and down. She was very nervous. And then I walked back to WOR from NBC. And I was there in time to listen to the show. And he put me up in the control room, a separate control room from where he was. And I listened to it and came down afterwards. And there's a gag. He said, okay, because I had long curls, and I had my school books, and I had a Breton hat. And he said, okay, let's hear it. And when I did it, he said, you're starting next week at $10 a show. And $10 a show was a lot of money to me at that time. And that's what we did for 4 years. He said, I don't want anybody to know you're doing it, because that'll spoil the illusion. So I never got any publicity on it. And even when we did the show on, what was it, the one with Isabel Jewell?
Did you do one at Carnegie Hall?
Well, not Carnegie Hall. It was on the Star Theater, Star Spangled Theater. It was years after the show had gone off the air. He called me back to do Nancy and a couple of other parts in The Gypsy's Hand.
Right.
And even then, everything was very hush-hush about my playing the witch. So he was very strange, Dean.
Did people ever compare you to Miss Fitzallen?
Well, he did. And any time I started to sound a little bit more like myself, he'd scream. And then, but I mean scream. And Marie would say, oh, Dean, she's only a child and she's doing very well, leave her. So eventually I did my own thing. But at the very beginning, I was imitating her. He had, if you notice in the script for the dialogue for Nancy is written in dialect.
Right.
And she was from New England.
Nancy Holcomb.
Hmm?
Nancy Holcomb. You actually had a last name. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
In the first episodes, she was called Nancy Holcomb, H-O-L-C-O-M-B.
Isn't that great? That's another gag, huh? Because Holcomb is a lot of bullshit.
No, H-O-L-C-O-M-B.
I know, but that was his way of saying it.
Oh, okay.
No, that would be him.
The name is Alan DeWitt, Mark Smith.
Yes.
What can you tell me about those two gentlemen?
Is it Alan DeWitt? No.
No, wasn't Alan DeWitt? I thought one of the people who was a regular was Alan.
It was Alan. I don't know. It sounded right, and then it sounds wrong.
I thought it was DeWitt.
Yeah, it might be DeWitt.
Or maybe Dimmitt.
Huh?
I thought it was...
there's something wrong with the last name.
D-I-M-I-T-T?
Hmm?
Is it D-I-M-I-T-T?
No.
And Mark Smith.
Mark Smith. Mark Smith is huge. He must have been about 6 feet wide by about 10 feet tall, as far as I was concerned. When he stood with you at the ballpoint mic, he took up three-quarters of the space. And I used to play his mother quite regularly on the show. He was a wonderful actor. They were both. Alan DeWitt, yeah, Alan. Isn't that funny? I'll have to look it up in my files. Anyway, Alan was marvelous. He was older, and he had false teeth, and when we stood around the ballpoint mic and the scene got very exciting, his teeth would go flying out of his mouth. He'd grab on and push them back in, and we'd continue with the scene. I was 12 years old, 14 years old. I was very frightened. I used to stand there shivering.
Marie Flynn was the only woman, the only other female who...
Marie O'Flynn, and I played all the women's parts. Except occasionally, when it was absolutely impossible, or whether he, when he wanted someone to special on the show, he would call someone like Esther Sundergaard, or, you know, they'd be on it occasionally. But we were the only regulars on the show. Mm-hmm. And I played the ingenue once when Marie O'Flynn was sick. This is stuff that you probably, this is the stuff I think you should use in your book. But I don't want to be the one to write it.
Well, all right, but I don't want to overdo the because the other, in terms of marketing, the two groups that we would try to market the book to would be A, radio people, and B, people who have perhaps no interest at all in radio, but are only interested in reading about it, reading a bunch of horror stories.
Yeah.
In other words, the horror market and the radio market.
Yeah.
Because I just
the
don't.
The scripts hold up for that?
I'm hoping so.
Because I think that most of the horror came from the performance.
Yeah. Well, that's the gamble. You know, if they were short stories, there'd be no problem.
Because this is one of the reasons why we're not allowed to change any words. He had a certain rhythm going that was there to frighten you.
Right.
And
you can actually see the scripts actually are in his, they're typed, but his handwriting is all over the place.
Oh, he's kept rewriting everything. And when he wrote the scripts to start with, he did them in longhand. And when he was doing them at home, I understood from Marie that he was hell to live with, because he would, if he couldn't get something right, he would break into a rage and he'd start throwing dishes. And she had more broken dishes than any other woman who was ever married.
Maybe he's the reason that she went into an institution. If she did, do the names Powell or
Alan DeWitt? I suppose is the name. Yeah. Alan DeWitt. It's funny. It sounds.
The only other names I have here are people who were in programs occasionally, but not on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Someone named Powell, someone named Arthur, someone named Thorne, someone named Gaxton, even Guy Rep on one occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Hoyer, H-O-I-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
None of those names.
I don't remember.
There was also a period when, in September of 1935, when you had a sponsor, Martinson Coffee, sponsored you for a while.
Very short period.
Yeah.
Very, very short period. Didn't improve my salary at all.
did you have any contact with Mr. Cole after the program went off the air?
Yes. I went to visit him up in Scarsdale at their place.
Mm-hmm.
And just the one time that I went up there.
Of course, he did Casey Crime Photographer after that.
And he used me on Casey one or two times.
Yeah. I thought I'd try to get in touch with Jackson Beck, who would not know him from The Witch's Tale, but would know him from Casey.
From Casey, yeah. What's the name of the chap? Carl Swenson.
Well, Carl Swenson has passed. Stotts Cotsworth played Casey.
Stotts Cotsworth, I'm sorry. No. Yeah, Stotts Cotsworth.
He's gone.
Who would remember? Well, I really, you know, if you're just doing this as an anthology, I don't know why, except for your own personal curiosity, I don't know why you're looking for all these stories.
Well, either to provide a little bit of color,
mm-hmm.
or, as you say, just you, after a while you become so deeply involved. People who do research for any project, you know, they may, it's like an iceberg.
Yeah.
You may print only the a small portion of what you learn,
but you
feel so much better because then no matter what the reader has read, you really know that you know the people involved.
Yeah. Well, leave them wanting more, as they say.
always leave them. Always leave them that way.
Yeah.
Okay. I you've been very kind. I'm not going to keep you any longer.
I'm very pleased that you're doing this.
I'm going to. I'm so happy that after having met you again, and being so discouraged that things just seem to turn around shortly thereafter.
That you have the scripts. I'd be very curious to see them. I'm all 350 of them.
They take up. They were sent to me FedExed in four large boxes.
I'm sure.
I've got to return the boxes to Mrs. Cole.
Yeah. Without the script.
No, with the script. But I'm keeping. That's why I made the photocopies. I have a photocopy of all the scripts.
Yeah. Now you have the right to.
What I did was to pay a royalty.
To whom? To whom?
To Mrs. Cole.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that we print about 1,000 or between 1,000 and 1,500 copies. If we print any more than that, or if it ever goes into a second printing, then I'd have to, you know, go back to her.
Yeah.
So.
Did she specify the number of scripts you could use?
I think in the cover letter we said somewhere between a dozen, about a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think if I stretch it to 13, I'm not going to get into trouble.
May I put my neck into this and give you some advice on what to choose?
I'm always happy to hear you.
I would say there are many of the scripts which, on second reading, if they're, particularly if they're read by someone who is not an actor, as your audience will not be actors, on a second reading of a script, if you find that it doesn't play or that it lacks in any way, choose the ones that are the tightest. And I think out of 100 to 300, you'll probably be able to find, if you're lucky, 13.
Yeah. My thinking was, A, to stay away from the classics. In other words, he did Rappaccini's Daughter, he did Frankenstein, he did the Golem, he did things like that. And I would try to stay away from anything that was an adaptation.
Yeah.
Because people are familiar with those stories.
Yeah. Unless they were awfully well done. And in that way, it might be even more interesting.
Yeah. I would also stay away from the two-parters because that would be twice as long in terms of using the scripts.
Yeah.
He actually did one three-parter.
Well, this is what happened. We got on the air, and he discovered that we were going over. His timing was off. And so he had to rewrite every time. And he had to draw the damn thing out. And so as a result...
You mean the two-parters were not originally planned as two-parters?
No, they were planned as one script.
Yeah.
This is what I was telling you.
Yeah.
We're standing around the ballpoint, Mike. He shoves this legal pad in your face and says, this is the epilogue. Change it. Read it. And you can hardly read his handwriting. And you can know from his scripts what his handwriting was like. And I would do an epilogue saying it was to be continued next week. He would go home and rewrite, say, 5 pages of the script. Last 5 pages, he would stretch out into 29 minutes.
Wow. Well, so, the man had talent.
The man had a great deal of talent, but sometimes it didn't work. That's why I'm saying to you, take a look and see which ones are the tightest.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them will not hold now.
Okay, I hope that I can be the judge of that. I'm not sure that,
well,
that my talent is that
good. Don't write the book.
Okay, I'm not writing the book. I'm editing the book.
Don't edit it.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
No, I'm being very cruel. I'm
No, that's all right. I've been around for... If I can't take it, I shouldn't be here. If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen.
No, I'm very pleased that you're doing this. I'm delighted.
I used my David Siegel stationery. When I write to you again, I probably will use our Book Hunter Press stationery.
All right.
So if you get something that says Book Hunter Press on it, don't think it's a solicitation.
All right.
I'll include one of our books just so you can see.
I would like very much for you to do that. Would you mark it, please, unsolicited gift, because I'm liable to be charged.
Oh, I'll put something on the envelope saying this is a gift.
Just unsolicited gift.
Unsolicited gift, okay.
Okay.
I don't want you to pay for anything.
No, it's just that it's silly. But
No, I'll be happy to do that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
It has been wonderful speaking to you.
It's been wonderful.
We're going off, by the way. My wife and I are going off to China come March 14th. So I will try to get this out to you before we leave. But you know, if there's a period of time that we're not in contact, it doesn't mean that I've fallen off the face of the earth.
Well, I hope not, especially that particular part of the face of the earth.
Yeah. But whenever you feel comfortable, when you reach the point where you feel comfortable about putting something in writing, just use.
I'll tell you something. I've been making notes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Which I don't usually do, but I got pretty excited about this. All right? It may not show in my voice, but that's my witch's palace that comes out once in a while.
That's Salem. Do you still have the cat, the black cat, Satan?
Oh, incidentally, one of the things I want to put in the preface is that, you know, he played the cat. Alonzo Dean Cole played the cat.
Yeah, it says, all of his, at the end of the programs, it always says, Nancy and the cat were played by themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
As though there was a Nancy and there was a cat.
Yeah. Well, he played the cat, and he timed his meows just about the same way that he timed his script. Every sound was important.
Mm-hmm.
It established the mood of what he was doing. And you can tell that best by listening to the tapes.
The man was a genius.
He really was something else.
Yeah.
And he was a terrible, terrible temper.
Well, my former mother-in-law would always tell me that you can forgive, you know, an artist can be forgiven anything. I always disagreed with her, but never publicly.
I don't agree. I like kindness.
Yes, well, it's nice.
Even if I'm part witch, I like kindness.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Anyway, before I melt, and your purse melts, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
All good luck, and if I don't speak with you before, then have a good trip.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Tell your wife it's going to be okay.
All right.
Okay.
I'll tell her.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.